Canadian Catholic philosopher and author Charles Taylor has been awarded the 2007 Templeton Prize for Research into Spiritual Realities. Given annually, this award is the largest monetary prize, worth more than the Nobel Awards, to highlight the importance of progress in spiritual subject matters. Professor Charles Taylor, who teaches law and philosophy at Northwestern University in Illinois, has spent nearly half a century arguing that problems of violence in modern society can only be resolved by tackling both their secular and their spiritual dimensions. Born in Montreal in 1931, Taylor grew up in a Catholic home where both English and French were spoken, sparking an early interest in questions of identity within a pluralist society. It was while he was studying philosophy at Oxford University that he first encountered what he describes as an unstructured hostility towards religious belief. That in turn led him to question the so-called objective approaches of psychology, history, linguistics, and other social sciences.
My take on it is that we have to rediscover how broad and plural reason is. It's not simply a set of procedures of, you know, logical deduction and so on. And I think we have to really redefine what people understand as reason, which is far too narrow in our intellectual culture.
In recent years, the Templeton Prize has been awarded to mathematicians or researchers into the natural sciences, and Professor Taylor told me he was at first surprised to hear he'd been chosen for this prestigious award.
Yes, I was very surprised, but I mean, in retrospect, it's not totally a change in course. I mean, the brief of the foundation is really very, very broad to whatever can further the understanding of spirituality and so on. And they've chosen in recent years to focus on this very interesting issue of the relation of natural science to faith, and they've given the prize to people who've said something very interesting and new about that. But it's implicit in the whole idea of Sir John Templeton that one wants to break down this artificial barrier between sciences of any kind, I mean, or, you know, discipline studies of any kind, and spirituality, that the same kind of considerations could arise about the humanities and social sciences. And maybe even, in a sense, more urgently, because I think that our humanities and social sciences in many countries in the West, and Anglo-Saxon countries in particular, have been very often construed narrowly, let's put it that way, by practitioners who have thought they could more or less ignore religion as something that, you know, belonged to the past, or see it as not really important in the explanation of what human beings do.
Now, you've spent most of your career, haven't you, insisting on the need to include a spiritual dimension into the public debate, quite a countercultural position for British society. Do you feel there's been a change recently in public opinion that is coming more round to your views now?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there was a narrative, as it were, a secularization narrative that was there in the background, that religion belonged to the past, that modernity automatically leads to a decline in religion, and so you can ignore it more and more. And I think that the last 20 years have really badly shaken that, and people have reacted differently to this, of course, but it's just not possible to say that it doesn't affect us, or it's not something that's still very, very living and very important. You may be very against it. You may think that it's appalling that this is happening, but you can't really just ignore it. So there's begun to be a shift. It's very slow because, you know, academic disciplines are very, very conservative, but there is beginning to be a change.
Would you say that recently it's above all the rise in Islamic fundamentalism, perhaps, that is provoking this serious re-evaluation of the role of religion in public life?
Yeah, it's not the only thing, but I think it's probably the most important one, yeah. And in a certain sense, this is, I think, posing a real cultural and spiritual crisis for the West, because it's possible to respond to this in a way which is totally hostile to religion as such, in this case to Islam as such, and to clutch on to tremendously simple and homogenized views of Islam as something, you know, is essentially behind this kind of terrorist attack. as against understanding how tremendously varied and internally complex the Islamic world is, and so on. And I find it very worrying that a lot of public opinion in the West and in a lot of media and in a lot even of scholars who should know better, we find this kind of Islamophobia being fed and encouraged.
You're talking about the urgent need for new insight, aren't you, into
yes.
the human propensity for violence. But as you know, of course, religions, all religions, were and are still seen by many people as part of the problem.
Yes.
Are church leaders, therefore, or faith leaders in general, able, do you think, to transcend these past problems and offer any real insight or guidance?
Oh, I think undoubtedly, yes. I mean, for one thing, it's clear that much religion has been behind a lot of violence, or then much atheist ideology has been behind violence. And then many religious leaders have been very firmly on the side of attempting to overcome violence, to find peaceful solutions and to these problems. So there are people in both type of ideologies, if you like, in more faith positions, who are on both sides. And we have great tradition in the Christian church of people who have been working for peace. So we just have to build on those and make them our central understanding of our faith, and also, you know, repudiate those elements in our past which tell against this. I think one of the great things about John Paul's pontificate was that he was really willing to make this tremendously clear that we deeply regret those passages in our past that, in a sense, betrayed our commitment to peace as Christians.
Yet the Catholic Church tends to look at such violent episodes in the past by saying that individual people may have sinned, but the Church itself cannot be blamed for such violence. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think that that's something very hard for people to understand. I mean, there's a certain sense of the church which is always God's church, which is a very deep theological notion, and therefore which in a way stands beyond all this. But most people don't understand that theological distinction. They think of how institutions operate. And when they see Pope Urban II preaching the crusade, you know, it's very hard for them to say, well, what do you mean there's no institutional responsibility here. I think that was a rather foolish thing to say. I mean, unless you can give the whole world a very deep understanding of Christian theology and the nature of the church, it needs to be put in a much more nuanced way than that.
You're talking about the important role of charismatic leaders. You mentioned Gandhi or Mandela or Archbishop Tutu, for example. How much
yes.
do you think, then, that the acceptance of religion in public life today really depends upon people like this?
Oh, a great deal. I mean, people who otherwise might be very hostile are really brought up short when they you know, meet a figure like Tutu or any of these figures. So I think that a great part of the message, as it were, of the Church of the World passes through figures like that who can really turn people around who have otherwise sharing these very harsh prejudices against religion and against the church and so on. Suddenly it gets through to them that there's something more to it than that when they read or meet figures like that.
You're very interested in this whole phenomenon of secularization, aren't you, and the rise of what you call new forms of religious belief and practice.
Yes.
What exactly do you mean here?
Well, I think that there are a tremendous variety of religious or spiritual or halfway between sort of religious and non-religious positions that are growing all the time. And it's a tremendous variety of atheist positions. I mean, if you think of the influence of Nietzsche over the last century and how that adds, you know, totally different themes to the ones that we had in the old forms of unbelief from Voltaire and Gibbon and so on. You can see that on both sides, and in the middle, there's constantly new positions that were not even imagined by our ancestors. Now, these are not only being propounded, they are all finding some degree of support, not some very, very small, some larger. I think that is going to be a continuing feature of modern culture, that that any faith position is going to have to swim in a sea of extremely diverse denizens and be able to speak to that.
And yet, of course, the established, the older churches tend to look at these new forms of religious belief as something of a threat rather than an ally. Does this kind of attitude worry you?
Yes. I don't think it's going to be fruitful, or from even evangelization point of view, it's going to be fruitful. What one has to do, I think, is to, of course, criticize other positions that are, you know, one really thinks are not correct, but also to have a sympathetic understanding of what moves people into those positions so that you can speak to these very deep impulses in people and you know, partial insights that people have that have put them in those positions. And if you just stand outside and condemn the old way, you're cutting off a very, very vital dialogue.
You were brought up a Catholic, weren't you, in your native
Yes.
Canada. How much did your own faith, or has your own faith, inspired your work over the years?
Oh, I mean, in a way, totally. I mean, it's been the thing that somehow is at the core of the whole thing. You have to, if you're doing this kind of work, you have to have, you're always moved by some very fundamental insights, which are very terribly vague at the beginning and not very much less vague now, maybe, but that push you forward and you try to define further. And mine have been totally bound up with my Christian faith, Catholic faith.
Pope Benedict and his predecessor, John Paul II, have also had a lot to say about the dangers of divorcing faith from reason or scientific inquiry. Are you very much encouraged, then, by these papal documents, these speeches?
Yes, I am. I mean, I have certain differences with the actual ways of formulating them and so on, but that basic line is one that I absolutely, entirely agree with. I mean, I think my take on it is that we have to rediscover how broad and plural reason is. It's not simply a set of procedures of, you know, logical deduction and so on. It has much more to it than that. If we go back to Plato, you can see that. And I think we have to really redefine what people understand as reason, which is far too narrow in our intellectual culture.
And my thanks there to Canadian Catholic philosopher and Professor Charles Taylor, the recipient of the 2007 Templeton Prize for research into spiritual realities.